From Indiana to Warminster, Waynesburg to Pittston, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro has proposed a radical new plan to tax energy producers and manufacturers under the guise of cutting greenhouse gas emissions. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And once again, Pennsylvania's presidential primary will take place well after both party nominations have been decided. I'll have a town hall commentary on why it is time to turn the clock forward to give state voters a bigger say in the process. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A new report from the Commonwealth Foundation finds that 34% of public employees in Pennsylvania pay union dues. This makes Pennsylvania one of the most union-dense states in the nation. The report explains that public sector unions are different from private sector unions in that, quote, collective bargaining gives government unions direct and exclusive access to the public policymaking process, end quote. The report notes that this access and influence often comes at the expense of taxpayers. Transparency continues to be a problem in state government. The Erie Times News reports that monthly expenses for the state Senate are regularly posted on the chamber's website, but members of the state House can decide for themselves whether or not to post their expenses, and many choose not to do so. Pennsylvania does have an open records law and an office to enforce it. Despite that, much of what happens in state government remains outside the public's view. U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. and Republican challenger Dave McCormick will each have a clear path to their respective party nominations for a seat in the Senate. Democrat Will Parker and Republicans Brandi Tomasetti and Joseph Von Varka filed nomination petitions for the office, but challenges to their petitions were successful in clearing the field for a Casey-McCormick showdown in the November general election. The race is considered to be one of the most competitive in the nation. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. He says he wants to make Pennsylvania more economically competitive, but Governor Josh Shapiro's recently announced plan to essentially add a new layer of taxes on energy producers and manufacturers will send the state in exactly the wrong direction. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars. From the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Always glad to be here, David. Thank you.
Great to be with you. And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve?
David, great to be with you.
The latest news, kind of the big thing, is that the governor is seeking to be the energy czar of Pennsylvania and to decide what the energy mix on the economy should be and how it'll be produced and all these other sorts of things that he, you know, the statement that was repeated again and again is that we can't just do nothing. Well, I'm thinking, well, just the government doing nothing is allowing the market to work, which is how you actually get functional outcomes and good decisions on how people's money is spent.
And this new program that Governor Shapiro has introduced, he calls it PACER, P-A-C-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of back when I was a kid, there was a car out called American Motors Pacer.
Mm-hmm.
But American Motors also made another model called the Gremlin. And I think the Gremlin is actually a better name for at least the impact of what Governor Shapiro's plan would force upon Pennsylvania taxpayers.
Yeah. So what he is recommending here, at least the first part of it, is to create like a mini Reggie for Pennsylvania.
Just for Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And if you'll remember, the existing Reggie was an interstate compact. Multiple states joined up, and they forfeited certain rights to the compact to be able to make decisions. Well, that wasn't good, and it's still being litigated in court, and it may, in fact—
Because the governor appealed the ruling of the Commonwealth Court.
The Commonwealth Court ruled against it, said it's an unconstitutionally imposed tax on the people of Pennsylvania, and the governor doesn't have power to unilaterally— or the commission, an interstate compact, doesn't have the power to levy a tax on Pennsylvanians. So what instead the governor is now trying to say is better. So instead of being part of a multi-state compact that punishes the well-being and financial situation of Pennsylvania citizens, now he's saying it'll just be Pennsylvania and we'll do it to ourselves. We'll hurt our own taxpayers, but no one else.
Well, it's and there's some part of the scheme where he thinks that he can impose this burden on ratepayers out of state because we export electricity.
That's true. We are the biggest exporter of electricity. And this is part of the reason why a lot of folks believe that RGGI was not appropriate for Pennsylvania, because we are the number one exporting state of electricity, as opposed to the other states in the compact, which are not net exporters of electricity. In fact, Pennsylvania supplies most of their electricity, a lot of their electricity in the PJM network. So so that's exactly why a lot of folks believe that RGGI wasn't appropriate. But on the flip side, like you said, trying to oppose a tax like this just on Pennsylvania when we have such a successful energy sector.
Correct.
And it is one of our key growth components in Pennsylvania, to sort of try to crush that and tamp it down is really not it's short-sighted.
Well, and it reminds me, you know, you guys have heard me talk about government greed, you know, where the government will take from the productive sector and just do with it what it wants. And there's also I see that same impulse with this. It's like, well, it's not good enough that Pennsylvania and energy producers have created this great this great wealth, this great abundance, where we're powering the grid, we are we're a net exporter, that instead somehow government has to control it. Like, it's not good enough unless government controls it and says what sources you may use and at what point in time what percentage of power must be generated by this certain sort. It's like, isn't that kind of like a – I don't know. It's like being a control freak.
Yeah, and in fact, the governor, when he announced the PACER, which we should say is the Pennsylvania Climate Emissions Reduction Act, PACER, he noted that 70% of the revenue would be directed back to residents as rebates for their electric bills. So what this says to me is two things. First, that he anticipates that electric rates are going to go up substantially.
Right. Yes.
So we're going to have to reimburse ratepayers for that. And the second thing is that the government is keeping 30% of the revenue.
Yes.
To invest in their pet projects, which
right.
is, to your point,
slush fund.
A control of what those projects are.
Yeah.
So the government will be taking control and focusing the energies of of those revenues into the projects that it believes are important.
And again, just such vanity.
And when you look at what Governor Shapiro rolled out, he talked about having three point premises for this new PACER plan. And the 3 points are: it must protect and create energy jobs. Well, the industry is doing that right now without RGGI or PACER. It must take real action to combat climate change. Pennsylvania's air has gotten cleaner because of the shift to natural gas on its own, not by government regulation, but
correct.
Because the economy of our state allowed that to happen. And the third premise of Governor Shapiro is to ensure reliable, affordable power to consumers. Well, our electric grid is doing that right now. It's struggling to do that to some degree only because government agencies or proposed new government bureaucracies are threatening it.
Yes.
But on its own, the grid has been reliant and resilient in Pennsylvania for consumers. So
yes.
This act, first of all, simply not necessary. It's the three things that the governor says is going to do, they're already happening.
Yes. Yes. And it was part of what was weird about the governor's press conference was that he wrapped this micromanagement plan in the great language of competitiveness and all these other sort of grand flourishes. It's like, well, I mean, having Pennsylvania impose a Pennsylvania-specific tax on Pennsylvania energy production, I said that, you know, Mike DeWine in Ohio and Jim Justice in West Virginia, like they should send the governor like a fruit basket or something, mm-hmm. like because he's given a clear market signal to investors. Go to these neighbor states. Don't come here because we're going to find a new way to bleed you.
And we'll keep with the car analogy. Like think about the Pacer. If we want to win the race, this Pacer program is if instead of winning the race, we've like let the air out of our own tires. And now mm-hmm. the car doesn't go as fast and other states are going to beat us by an even longer distance because we're not competitive.
Yeah.
We're reducing our own competitiveness just for the sake of these obscure promises for things that are already happening.
Well, and then there's also a lot of magical thinking that goes into this, that part of the governor's future energy mix for Pennsylvania mandated is fusion, which doesn't actually exist.
It might someday, though.
It might someday. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is like trying to – like are we going to power the economy with, infinity stones or mother boxes mm-hmm. or dilithium crystals from the warp drive? I mean, it's just like bizarre.
The Pennsylvania Reliable Energy Sustainability Standard,
uh-huh.
which is an expansion of the current AEPS, the the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's proposing to expand it, but also incorporate new forms of energy into the standard. So by 2035, like you said, which is in a hurry,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
By 2035, he wants 35% of our energy to come from clean energy sources like wind, solar, small modular reactors, and fusion. So
mm-hmm.
you mentioned fusion. Small modular reactors are also a great idea, but they don't exist yet.
The deployment of solar power, like the scale of it, would be unimaginably large. It would be bigger than 1/3 of all Pennsylvania's state forests. It would be a surface area larger than Chester, Delaware, and Philadelphia counties, every square inch of them combined. And so you're talking about I don't even know how many millions of tons of solar panels, which only have a useful life of maybe 20 years, and then they turn into toxic garbage.
And destruction of the landscape, destruction
yes.
of the ability to farm or create, you know, other crops that we use. We use our state lands and our lands across Pennsylvania's northern tier in particular for timber.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of important industries that exist because we have these open, undeveloped areas. Once you've laid them across with the solar panels on that kind of a scale,
mm-hmm.
you're disrupting habitats for
mm-hmm.
wild animals.
Yep.
Right. You're damaging runoff in the mm-hmm. streams and rivers of the Commonwealth. And you're just putting us again at an unnecessary disadvantage with respect to how we're getting our energy.
The other thing, ironically, is that trees, as we know, take carbon dioxide out of the air.
Yes.
And actually are a strong source of carbon sequestration.
Yes.
So
yes.
Making those lands covered with solar panels, we're actually removing a good source of carbon dioxide sequestration.
Yeah. We're going to have to destroy our land in
yes,
order to save it.
Yes,
exactly.
That's very much where we wind up with all
shooting
this.
Shooting ourselves in the foot in more ways than one. So,
and so anyway, I mean the reply. I thought the most telling thing in terms of responses was from the Senate President Pro Tempore Kim Ward, State Senator Kim Ward of Westmoreland County. And she said, referring to last year's budget deal, that the governor went back on his word and left the budget incomplete. Senator Ward said, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And that principle now applies. And she said, if you want us to consider your proposal, withdraw from REGI first.
Mm.
And I think that is spot on. That is perfectly appropriate. And that the legislature should not negotiate with the governor on this plan until and unless he withdraws Pennsylvania from the compact, which would render the case before the Supreme Court moot. Like, show us that you're serious. Because I don't know. I got left with the feeling that maybe this is all just some kind of a stunt, that this is just a PR move on the governor's part to try to say, well, this is what I would be for, but – you know, but the Republicans in the legislature won't let me. It'll be interesting to see to what degree they back up this proposal with specifics, and then how urgently they try to advance it in the legislature. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation.
Most interestingly, you talked about the fact that it might just be a rollout almost for public relations purposes without real substance behind it. And the most recent example we've seen of that was the governor's plan that he rolled out a few weeks ago to fix Pennsylvania's state-owned and state-related higher education system. And comically, this plan that he rolled out and was part of the budget hearings that were taking place before the House and Senate Appropriations Committees a few weeks ago was so short on specifics that when the actual chancellor of the system was brought before the committees to testify, he didn't know what was in it. He had no idea. He was standing there in front of members of the Senate and the House, raising his hands empty. He had nothing. Because there wasn't a real proposal.
Right.
It was a talking point.
Right.
And it sucked up some of the media oxygen out of the room, and it sounded nice,
yeah.
But there was no substance behind it.
And there was something similar with there was some plan for workforce development, coordination, and you look at it and it's like a $2 million program. Well, we spend like 1,000 times that much on workforce development, job training in Pennsylvania. So the idea that one little twist is going to somehow solve or correct the dysfunction, it's really kind of silly. But yet it does create a talking point, a marketing opportunity to sort of indicate the governor's interest in addressing what is a really serious problem.
I mean, these are really difficult problems that we're talking about here, and it really does take leadership. It takes, rolling up your sleeves and getting in there, negotiating and working out deals and getting your hands dirty, trying to work out the best plan to move forward for the state. And these are difficult problems, and I don't think we've really seen that commitment on these proposals.
I mean, Rebecca, I think you're right about that, and it takes me back to last year's budget address, where the governor said that because of the divided nature of the legislature, mm-hmm. that it would be necessary to play the game, as he said, between the 40-yard lines, mm-hmm. that we weren't going to get extreme partisan outcomes in either direction. What he put forward today is really extreme is an overused word, but again, the hubris of command and control, government direction of something as big as Pennsylvania's energy economy. This would be a massive wrenching dislocation of a critical system, which, as you have mentioned, Steve, like it works. Mm-hmm. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Many of the people who benefit from the advent of the cheap, abundant, clean sources of energy that we have now discovered in Pennsylvania are people who struggle financially.
Yes.
And they're being robbed of their chance for economic success, while across the rest of the state, consumers are being penalized with unnecessary mm-hmm. fees and things that raise the cost of their goods and services, including energy, all because the government isn't content to allow the market to work. When we've seen this opportunity, we understand that the amount of reserves we have in Pennsylvania in terms of natural gas in particular is enough for at least 100 years.
Yeah, it's world historic. It
allows for the not only Pennsylvania's economy to prosper, but stabilizes the geopolitical scenarios all around the world. When we in Pennsylvania and in the United States of America have these abundant sources of cheap, clean energy, we just need to use them and steward them in the way that we the market allows us to do by the competitive process.
What that buys us is time for the market to find the very best solutions for everyone, because it will in the end. We talk about the fusion and hydrogen. We know hydrogen is a big emerging technology too, but the market will find where they fit the best and the most efficient ways to use them in the future, but we have to allow the market time to work. And we are fortunate in Pennsylvania that we have the energy now that is useful and, like you said, fits all of the governor's criteria for what he wants to see out of energy strategy. So let's allow that to work.
By subsidizing and mandating these preferred energy sources and protecting them from competition, mm-hmm. they're actually delaying the emergence of those technological breakthroughs
yeah.
that would only come from undergoing the rigors of the marketplace. And that most challenging test of all, which is, is this worth me spending my own money on it?
Exactly.
And also just the process that we see again and again where government intervenes in either in our society or in our economy, and that there are inevitably all kinds of unintended consequences. And then those problems that arise from the initial government intervention are an excuse for, guess what?
More government intervention.
And, yeah. you know, it's like, you know, you look at the governor's plan for economic development and, you know, the potential good that would be over here with the dislocation that would be caused over here. It's like, well, that's a great reason to just make it a wash. Just don't do any of it. Save the money. Stop the dislocation, and we'll probably be no worse off than beforehand. So I you know, again, we're not going to change the governor's attitude or his approach to these things. But, you know, again, just to say that it's really kind of regrettable that that he won't just leave well enough alone. That meddling impulse, that you know, that control freak impulse that seems to take over the big government types. This is just boy. This is well of the many examples. This is the most recent. So as we wind down here to the end of our program, got to say thanks again to my team here for being together and taking a swing at this. So Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you do?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org, and our policy folks right now are working hard to decipher all the details of the governor's plan to the extent that they exist.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people find you?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And for Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks to all of you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In Pennsylvania, the incremental is revolutionary. That was a comment made by former Pennsylvania House Speaker Mike Terzai on occasion of his retirement from the lower chamber. It is reflective of the fact that, here in the Keystone State, legislatively at least, it is so difficult to bring about change that even small changes are a big deal. There are two timely reminders of the inability of the legislature to bring about change. The semi-annual ritual of switching between standard time and daylight savings time, and the fact that, once again, Pennsylvania's presidential primary will be held well after the party nominations have been decided. For many years, State Representative Russ Diamond of Lebanon County has proposed legislation designed to end the practice of changing back and forth between standard and daylight savings time. Aside from getting the representative some good media coverage twice a year, the legislation has, pardon the pun, not seen the light of day. A bit more progress has been made at the federal level. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida has introduced the so-called Sunshine Protection Act, which would make daylight savings time permanent. The bill did pass in the U.S. Senate, then stalled in the House of Representatives. Rubio is continuing his fight to give the Sunshine State and the rest of us more sunlight. Complicating efforts to end the clock-switching practice is a debate over whether to end daylight savings time, essentially making standard time permanent, or make daylight savings time permanent, ending the use of standard time. Opinions are split. I favor making daylight savings time permanent, as more sunlight later in the day would be more useful for sports and other recreational activities. Moving the date of the Pennsylvania presidential primary election has been debated quadrennially for decades. The state's late April primary, most of the time, has fallen so late in the process, earlier voting states have already determined the party's nominees. There have been several exceptions. The 2008 race for the Democratic presidential nomination between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton was not decided until the very end of the primary schedule. In 2016, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz were still battling for the Republican presidential nomination when Pennsylvania held its April primary. For a few months last year, it appeared the date of the 2024 primary would be changed. This year's Pennsylvania presidential primary falls during the Jewish observance of Passover, providing an added reason to move the election date. The state Senate did pass a bill moving the primary date to early March. Well, then Governor Josh Shapiro reneged on a budget deal he had negotiated with Senate Republicans, and the legislative process ground to a halt. By the time the smoke cleared, months had passed before House Democrats offered their own date change, which differed from that passed in the Senate. The chambers were unable to reach an agreement on a date, and by October, it had become logistically too late to move the primary, so the April 23rd election date remains in place. And so, with President Biden having faced no serious opposition to renomination and Donald Trump quickly wrapping up the GOP nomination, Pennsylvania voters will, again, have no say in the presidential nomination process. However, Pennsylvania will be a key, if not the key, battleground state headed into the general election campaign, which is now underway. Looking ahead, lawmakers would be well advised to begin the process of moving the 2028 Pennsylvania presidential primary election date now. It takes time, logistically, for counties to prepare for an election, and knowing the date several years in advance would make the election run much more smoothly. An earlier presidential primary date in 2028 makes sense in that, regardless of who wins the White House this November, both party nominations will be wide open, as neither President Biden nor former President Trump would be eligible to run again. Pennsylvania voters deserve to have a significant voice in that process. And who knows? Perhaps in 2028, we can even hold our primary before we once again return to daylight savings time. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The 2024 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 4th through 6th at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be best-selling author and award-winning film producer Dinesh D'Souza. He will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers and panelists, including Jenny Beth Martin of the Tea Party Patriots, conservative commentator Mary Catherine Hamm, Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts, and many others. The three-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest-running of the state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.